Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, welcome back to In the Pink, and thank you for your company. Thank you for your feedback on Nicholas Hamilton. He's so lovely, isn't he? What a great guy. For those of you who don't know, he is doing a physical challenge, and one that you may not think is that hard, but for someone with cerebral palsy is really tough. He's walking 151 steps to represent the podiums his brother Lewis has achieved, and he is giving all the money to the NHS. So that's fantastic. If you can get behind him on that, then brilliant. Okay, now I've had loads of interesting guests on In the Pink, and my next one is someone who isn't a household name, but is somebody who is a good friend of mine and a really interesting bloke. And he has been at the heart of Formula One for many, many years before switching over to W Series, and he was there at its inception and has helped grow that all-female racing series. He's done that with great pride. He's also proudly openly gay, and actually possibly the first openly gay man in Formula One paddock. Let me know if you know differently, but we're pretty sure that is the case. Anyway, look, I'm not going to tell you any more about him. His name is Matt Bishop, and I'm going to let him tell his own story and those of many people in Formula One, because I think any F1 fans out there are going to love his anecdotes. He's been in sport for years and has got some really interesting stories to tell. Here he is, Mr. Matt Bishop.
So Matt, thank you for joining me in these unprecedented times. It's kind of crazy, but we are joined by the power of Zoom, which is wonderful. And it means that we can have a good old natter and push this out as a podcast and share with the world some of your great stories from Formula One.
Well, I'm very happy to be part of that. I've never Zoomed before. I have. I'm a bit of a Luddite when it comes to technology. I know you set it up, but I'm incredibly proud of myself that I managed to not hit up, if you don't mind. So anyway, here we are, and apologise for that light in the background. It's a kind of bit of, I don't know, art something or other in,
I like it. I like it.
In London.
And I don't believe for 1 minute you're a Luddite. You have been a major figure in Formula One for many years. You're not currently working in the sport at the moment. You're in the W Series, more of that later. But just tell me how you first came to work in Formula One and where your passion came from for the sport.
Well, I started off in the very early 90s as a journalist and editor of a magazine called F1 Racing. Not necessarily the most imaginative title for a magazine about F1 racing. But nonetheless, in the words of Ron Seal, and we may come to another Ron later, but in the words of Ron Seal, it does what it says on the tin. So anyway, I got that job as editor of F1 Racing. And of course, in those days, there was no such thing as a website or a social media platform. And of course, the word podcast did not exist, Natalie.
So what are we talking?
We're talking well, I actually started as a journalist doing cars and motorsport and Formula One in about 91, but F1 Racing was launched in 96.
Right.
Became the editor of F1 Racing in 96. And we were the best.
A long time ago.
Well, have you not noticed this beard and the fact that there's no other hair anywhere else? You are talking to a bit of an oldie. It has to be said, but still going apparently strong so far. Anyway, so I did that. That was 1996, F1 Racing. There was no such thing as any... So magazines were the most important thing, magazines and newspapers, because there was nothing else. There was nothing, there was no digital anything. So yeah, it was. And our magazine was successful. I hired some great people, many of whom are still working in the sport. You will know them. People like Peter Windsor, Tom Clarkson, Darren Heath, the great photographer, and many others, and other ones that aren't potentially perhaps so well known to your viewers, because they were the backroom boys and girls, the great people who put the magazine together and designed it and subbed it and made it successful. And I just rode on their coattails and collected some of the glory. It was huge fun. I mean, there is no job better in terms of pure fun. There are better paid jobs, and I have had some better paid jobs, I must admit. But there are no jobs better than having your own magazine that is covering a subject you love and being able to write, commission, and publish whatever the hell you want on that subject. Oh, it was joy. Pure joy.
Where did that love come from? When did you first realize you had such a passion for Formula One?
Well, that's a good question. A lot of people, a lot of our friends and colleagues, whether they're drivers or mechanics or journalists or broadcasters or whatever, a lot of them say, oh, my dad took me when I was a little boy to Brands Hatch or Silverstone or Alton Park or whatever it is, or Monza or Manicor or wherever. But no, not with me. My father was and is a musician, and my mother, God rest her, was a writer. But none of them had the faintest interest in Formula One. I think they probably had heard of Formula One, and that was about it. I'm not even absolutely sure they had, because in those days, of course, it wasn't on telly in the same way as it is today. But I remember going into a news agent in about 1972 to pick up Shoot, which was the football weekly for kids, which was one of the things I got for my pocket money. So I would have been nine, nearly 10. And I saw this thing on the where all the other magazines were. I saw this thing and I carefully read the word to myself, Autosport. I thought, I wonder what that is. I already liked cars, and I could point out cars when I was walking down the street, Austin, Cambridge, Morris Oxford, Ford Corsair, all these things that no cars are called anymore. I know I'm making myself sound ludicrously old, but they were petrol engines, they weren't steam engines, I promise you. Anyway, I picked up this thing called Autosport, and inside it had various things, and it had a report of a thing that was a car race, a motor race. I didn't know they existed. And a man called Jackie Stewart had won it. And I thought, my goodness. And that was 12.5p. So I paid 12.5p for my Autosport. And honestly, Pinky, I was hooked thereafter. I just was. It was just me. I realized that, in fact, I didn't know anybody else who knew about it. I'd never heard of it. I thought that this strange thing had been invented purely to entertain the eccentric nine-year-old that was me.
Aha, the eccentricity. So is that what appealed to you, that you discovered something that previously hadn't been?
Well, yes. And, you know, and I went to school. Some people said, oh, yes, I've heard of Jackie Stewart. I hadn't, but very few. You have to realise it wasn't on the telly in 1973. It was not even on the television. It was not reported in the newspapers. If you wanted to find out who'd won the 1973 British Grand Prix, which of course you know was Peter Revson, obviously, you would have to wait till Monday morning and buy the Daily Telegraph. Not a lot of nine-year-olds buy the Daily Telegraph, even in those days. And then you'd see it in 4-point at the very back, probably not even a report, might be a report for the British Grand Prix. But for, let's say, the Argentine Grand Prix or the Italian Grand Prix, there wouldn't have been a report. And it would just say, one, Emerson Fittipaldi, two, Ronnie Peterson, three, Jackie Stewart. That would be it. It wouldn't say who was fourth, fifth, and sixth. It wouldn't say who had led the first 62 laps before they had an engine failure. It might not even say who had been killed. That's how weird that world was. But I found it extraordinary. And here we are, getting on for 50 years later.
And you made that transition from editor of the magazine to working for a team. Just tell us that story, because it's quite extraordinary.
Well, that came out of... I'd been editor of F1 Racing and then also a director of Haymarket, which used to be the publisher of F1 Racing and Autosport, in fact. So that thing that I found when I was 9, I ended up being editorial director of. Strange.
That's not strange. That sums you up.
Well, it's very odd, isn't it? It's very
determination and ambition. It's amazing.
There you go. And I'd done that for 11 years. And obviously, during the course of that time, we'd grown the magazine, made it very good, very successful, which had been done on the back, really, of people, kind of people I've mentioned, who were magnificent staff that I had alongside me. And we, therefore, got to know everybody in the sport, because we were the magazine that you needed to be interviewed by, because we were the biggest and the best and all the rest of it. Sorry, I don't mean that to be arrogant. It's absolutely... Well, the sales means that we were the biggest, and the best is the result of the efforts of people like Tom Clarkson and Peter Windsor and Darren Heath and so on and so forth. I just happened to be working with them. But, of course, therefore, we got to know everybody. And for some reason, I got to know Ron Dennis very well. Ron Dennis isn't everybody's cup of tea, of course. I didn't necessarily think he was going to be mine. Perhaps he isn't even my cup of tea, but I do know him. And for some reason, we got on very well. And I think he began to think of me as some kind of good thing, or the kind of acceptable side of journalism. And I think I realized that he quite liked, if you're a journalist, you should be intellectual. If you're mechanic, you should be mechanical. And Ron likes people to sit in their right boxes in that way. So I can do a very good impersonation of being, let me tell you. And I used to plumb the absolute depths of my vocabulary, lexicon I would have called it if I was talking to Ron, of course, in order to impress him. And in the end, after many, many years of interviewing him and chatting to him and having dinner with him at races and in hotels, and he offered me a job. And he first offered me a job actually at Manucourt French Grand Prix of 2001, but it wasn't the right job, wasn't actually the right money, to be fair. And I was very happy doing what I was doing. So I said, no thanks. So there was a thing called Spygate in 2007, and many of your viewers may know all about it. So I'll just quickly say what it was that McLaren, or in fact a McLaren employee, had been caught in possession of 780 pages, quite a lot of pages, of Ferrari technical drawings, IP, intellectual property. And it was a big, big scandal. And the FIA was unimpressed. And the FIA, in the end, fined McLaren $100 million. This is, of course, public record. And what then needed to happen to McLaren, which could fortunately pay the $100 million, teams, big Formula One teams, can you imagine? It's not that long ago, 13 years ago, but they were able, they had $100 million washing around, you know. The very idea of that happening now, just not possible. Anyway, it was possible. So the fine was paid, and...
Can I just ask, who's the fine paid to?
Well, it was paid to the FIA, and the FIA then spent it. I mean, you'd have to ask the FIA exactly what they spend every single last cent of it on, but they did a number of road safety initiatives and so on and so forth. I mean, I can't exactly remember every detail.
It's a lot of money though, isn't it?
It's a lot of road safety you can get out of that.
Yeah.
But I hope it was wisely spent. And if it did, by the way, increase road safety and reduce deaths as a result of road safety, then it was one money well spent. So I'm not going to argue about it. Anyway, that's where it went. And the next, obviously, important problem was to rebuild McLaren's reputation, because there had been a problem, you know, to have been found guilty in that sense. And Ron and McLaren had very good PR staff, but they didn't kind of have a grizzled and hard-bitten spin doctor type communications PR strategist. And I suppose I would vaguely claim to be one of those. So Ron hired me, and that was a hefty salary hike, which was very good. And I then worked as a director of McLaren for the next 10 years. And also absolutely fantastic time. I mean, you're probably going to ask me a bit about that and a bit about the people I spoke to. So I'll shut up and let you ask me.
To give your personal story some more depth, you are, well, to my knowledge, the only openly gay man working in Formula One. I mean, I'm sure there are others, but not to my knowledge. Do you know if there are?
Well, very interesting question. When I arrived in the early 90s, I was definitely the only gay in the F1 village, the only one. Not that we used that phrase, the only gay in the village in those days, but I was. And I always decided, you know, what am I going to do here? I know I've joined a very male, very heterosexual world. And am I going to be closeted, as I assumed there must be others? Or am I just going to be not out and proud and screaming from the rooftops and going into the paddock wearing a pink tutu, which is not really my style anyway, and which I wouldn't set off in a very elegant way? So I decided, no, I'll just be open. If I'm asked, I'll be open. I won't go straight and say, morning, Michael Schumacher, very nice to meet you. I'm gay, by the way. But what I will do is, if asked, or if it becomes obvious, or if somebody says, are you married or do you have kids, I'd say, no, I'm gay. And that's what I did begin to do. And I'm told that there were some people who were who disapproved and who made homophobic remarks. But they only made them behind my back. Nobody ever made them in front of me, with one exception. But I really can't tell you the exception. I can't. I will tell you that it was a driver. It was a Formula One driver. And he verbally abused me and shouted the word faggot a number of times at me. Anyway, I'm not going to say who it was, but it was... That sounds such an extraordinary thing to happen now, doesn't it? It's so long
ago. It does. And it actually makes me think he's probably gay himself.
Well, he isn't apparently, no.
Ah, thought you were about to out someone then as well.
No. Anyway, your question was, am I the only gay in the village now? I mean, I'm probably not. I know there are some journalists, there are some other marketing people. I'm sure there are lots of people that one doesn't know about as well.
For sure.
You know, there may be, you know, cooks and chefs and various other people that one doesn't know about. In terms of senior people, or people who have been senior in teams and so on, perhaps I still am the only one.
Okay, time for Bose's handy tips about how we can all cope a bit better over the next few weeks and potentially months under lockdown. I think that's part of the problem, isn't it? We just don't know how long this is going to last, and that lack of control over our own lives can let anxiety creep in. But hopefully, if we can all follow these little nuggets of advice, it may just help. Okay, first of all, take time for yourself to stay centered and sane. Number two, seize moments of calm. They may be few and far between, but they are out there. You just need to grab them with both hands. Number three, find your sanctuary away from the chaos. Now, if like me, your whole house is chaotic, then that might be hard. But there must be a little corner somewhere where you can take yourself off and just have a moment or two. Because remember, timeouts aren't just for kids. It's really important to take a little me time, because it can go a long way. I know that sounds a bit selfish, because I always feel guilty if I go off and read a book or listen to some music or have a bath, or all three at the same time. But I think and hope that we all come back to our jobs in the house with the kids, with our family, as better mothers, better partners, more productive, if we have taken a bit of time out. Cabin fever is real. So one way to smash that oppressive feeling is to learn something new. Take up a new hobby, for example. Don't resist and fight the new norm. Embrace it. Shape it to suit you. For example, you could move rooms, change the layout at your home, create a new space dedicated to your new hobby. Make working for home work for you. Don't be afraid of the silence, if indeed it exists at any point during your day. It can be truly golden after all. Try to block out unhelpful noise, and that will also reduce your anxiety. It's not where you work, it's how you work. So make it work for you with a little bit of help from Bose. Feel more, do more, be more with Bose.
But just explain what it's been like. Because I'm always asked about Formula One. I always asked whether, you know, it really is a kind of misogynist world of sexist pigs. And I always say the same thing, which is that it's a meritocracy and that actually it's pretty forward thinking people, very, very bright people with passion, you know, perhaps with the exception of me, but the very bright forward thinking people who actually are very inclusive, regardless of your background, your sexuality, your gender. And as long as you work hard and you're passionate, then you will be accepted. Was that your experience being gay in Formula One?
Yeah, that was my experience. With the one exception, who I will not name, I have always been treated with, I'm going to use an unusual word, but with love. I have hugely enjoyed my long, long time in Formula One. And of course, I still work in motorsport, at W Series. But I have enjoyed it. I continue to enjoy it. I've made fantastic friends at all levels and in all disciplines. And I've never encountered any homophobia at all, with that one exception. Some people tell me that there's been the odd, you know, tongue wagging in the behind my back. That wasn't supposed to be an innuendo, by the way, but there you go. Now, and if that has been, I didn't get to hear it. But I'm going to tell you something else, because I think it's quite interesting. When I arrived in Formula One, yes, I was the only gay in the village of any seniority or at all, I think. Perhaps the only one that was out at all, actually. And now, of course, there are gay or LGBTQIA+, as one should call them, marketers, PR people, journalists, and so on and so forth. And in those disciplines, in those professions, I think it's fine. I still think it's actually rather difficult for mechanics and engineers. And that's one of the reasons we started Racing Pride, which I'm active in and one of the founders of. And Racing Pride is really to help people, mechanics and engineers, who still find it quite hard. And I remember when I was at McLaren, there would sometimes be a young mechanic or engineer who would kind of sidle up to me, perhaps in a hotel or perhaps at the factory or perhaps, you know, in transit for a long flight, and would begin to talk and would then say, do you know, I'm gay, but I can't come out. They wouldn't like it. They wouldn't like it in the, the other mechanics wouldn't like it. We have to share rooms. I don't think that would make it particularly popular with my roommate. It wouldn't work. How can you be out? And I'd say, well, I think you can just come out. Coming out is a very liberating thing to do. And I actually think you're mistaken, young man. I think you're mistaken. I think that perhaps that was the case 20 years ago, but I actually think that it is increasingly accepted to be LGBTQIA+, or gay, or whatever you want to call it, even among professions or demographics where they're not widely represented. And I am proud of Formula One, and I'm proud of the team I worked for, McLaren, and I'm proud of everybody who sails in McLaren, and I love the people at McLaren. And I personally think that if a young mechanic or engineer came out in McLaren, or by the way, I got approached sometimes by people from other teams because I was known to be the only gay in the village. So I might get an email from a private Hotmail account from someone who works at Jordan or Williams.
Oh, doesn't that just show they needed someone to talk to? That makes my heart ache.
So in fact, there are two countries where it is legal for males to have sex with each other, which is Abu Dhabi and Singapore. But out of the 200 countries in the world, about 200 countries, I think about half of them, or just under half, about 80, it's still illegal for men to have sex with each other. And so I think there is a battle that still needs to be waged. And Racing Pride just does its small little role to make things easier for principally engineers and mechanics, and also, by the way, young drivers, young carters, where they have encountered some prejudice, which includes, of course, young female carters. We have in W Series, which, as you know, is for women drivers only, and we have two out lesbians, Sarah Moore and Abby Eaton, and both of those have talked a little bit about having found things a little bit harder when they were growing up through the ranks, and now, of course, they're both engaged as ambassadors of Racing Pride, and I'm very proud that they are.
That's great. Tell us a bit more about W Series and your reflections on the inaugural year, and how much pride you've taken in being a part of that process, really from the inception.
Yeah. I had a phone call from David Coulthard. Now, of course, I've known David Coulthard for years and years and years. And he said, are you still kind of not doing an awful lot? This was kind of very early 2018. And I'd left McLaren in the summer of 2017. So I said, well, I'm doing a bit of consultancy here and there. Why? He said, well, I'd like you to do a bit of consultancy for me and my mate, Sean Wadsworth, and also Catherine Bonmuir, who are the three of us setting up a thing called W Series. Have you heard of it? I said, no. He said, good. You're not supposed to have heard of it. It's supposed to be a secret. I said, good. So anyway, he explained it all to me. And then Sean Wadsworth and then Catherine Bonmuir also explained it all to me on three separate occasions. And I admit at first, I was a little bit skeptical. I'd had a quarter of a century in Formula One working with, very, very closely with the likes of Lewis Hamilton, Jenson Button, Fernando Alonso, Ron Dennis, and winning world championships with them. And, McLaren, still now, but absolutely then, a complete destination job for anyone who isn't Italian. And even quite a few who are, because there's a lot of Italians in Weybridge, by the way, which is near Woking. Anyway, so I was a little bit skeptical. And I thought, well, I'll give it a go. I'll do a bit of consultancy, and I did. But I didn't know how good the drivers would be. I hadn't heard of very many of them. By the way, we hadn't even hired any yet or enlisted any. We were at the very beginning. We were a startup that hadn't yet started up. And I was also, Formula 3 cars with women drivers. I was skeptical, but I thought I'll give it an absolute. I'll give some consultancy days. Anyway, very soon, I was absolutely smitten with it. And I am now an evangelist for it. I think it's the most wonderful thing. And you may not believe me, but I promise you it's true. I've had some wonderful moments in my career, including my Formula One career. I was in the garage at Interlagos, screaming myself hoarse in 2008. When Lewis Hamilton won the world championship on the last corner of the last lap of the last race. I was there, and I've been working incredibly closely with Lewis all year. But I've actually had experiences at W Series in our inaugural season, which was last season, which I would rank with that. in terms of the emotion of, well, getting that startup started. You know, I remember standing on the grid at Hockenheim, which was our first race in May 2019, and seeing all the cars go off on their parade lap and then coming into view, going around the last turn and forming up on the grid and looking at Catherine Bonnemur. Floods of tears she was in, actually. And I was welling up. And she just turned to me and she said, "We did it, we did it." And then off they went, and there was a great motor race. And, you know, the hairs on the back of my neck stand up as I tell you that, because it was a tiny team, it's still a small team, but it was an absolutely tiny team then. And we had nothing. We had a brand called W Series that nobody had heard of. We didn't have a driver, we didn't have a car, we didn't have anything. But we created something, and we went motor racing. And we were live on television in many countries. We were on television, not always live, but on television in over 100 countries worldwide.
Amazing.
And we were available to 340 million households worldwide in year one. And that was with a tiny little team. And it's one of the highlights of my career, yes, absolutely. And they're great girls. They're fantastic.
They really are. And they've got a great person in you getting behind them. It seems to me there's a bit of a theme here, actually, Matt. You're a bit of a trailblazer, history maker, if you will, in terms of helping out young gay men and women come to terms with their position within motorsport, and now getting women well and truly on the map. Is that something that you're aware of? Is that something that you strive for?
I don't really think so, no. I think I think maybe because I was seen as a bit of a talisman for gay men, I think some of the young engineers and mechanics saw me as someone to go and seek advice from. Yes, I think that was the case. As regards women, I think W Series landed in my lap, and I realised, not initially, as I said, but after quite a short time, a few weeks, what a magnificent thing it could be and how big and how good we could make it. Mm. Didn't have to be a small thing. It could be a huge thing. And, obviously the world is in a funny place at the moment. So we don't know exactly what shape or size our season is going to be in 2020 because of the coronavirus. And that applies to every single, not just motorsport, but every single sport in the world. So there's no point trying to make predictions about that. But all I will say is that we had a great first season. Mm. And on the map, we've launched it, and we mean to go on.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, just thinking with my F1 cap on, we're hearing the calendar is absolutely decimated already. Three more races going today, or at least being postponed today, Monaco, Spain and Holland. Do you think that W Series has the strength to weather this storm?
All I can say about that is that we are an officially ratified FIA championship. We race on the DTM, German Touring Car, and Formula One platforms. That's where our 8 races are scheduled for 2020. I'm not going to tell you which ones are or aren't going to take place any more than Formula One could tell you. I mean, as you say, this very day they have changed, they've made an announcement that there's a further 3. So who knows what might happen? There's a thing called the Olympic Games later this summer. Who knows what might happen to that? So I couldn't say that. What I do know is that W Series has hit the ground running. It's engaged fans all over the world. We have now sponsors. We have huge media interest. We have great drivers. We have a great championship. And as soon as motorsport is...
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Going again, we want to be going again.
In the Pink and Bose really want to help during this lockdown. Now, whether we can or not is another question, but we can try, and we're going to do that by giving away some more Bose noise cancelling headphones. To win them, just share mini anecdotes from your time in lockdown. And give us some feedback on this series. Always put in the hashtag Bose and tag in a couple of mates to do the same. And you never know, those headphones could be yours. Good luck, stay safe and stay connected.
Now, you touched on it, that you've worked with Jensen, Lewis and Fernando. You must have some juicy little anecdotes on those three that we can round off this podcast with.
Okay, well, let me start with Lewis. Because Lewis is Lewis, isn't he? Lewis is the biggest star in the sport, arguably probably one of the biggest sports stars in the world, and arguably therefore probably one of the biggest motor racing stars that there has ever been. He's also a brilliant driver. All of that is not subject to argument. Everybody knows all those things. Some people don't like him very much, or some people, he's a bit of a Marmite person, isn't he? Someone that you either love or don't love. Well, I love him. I think he's an absolutely wonderful person. He's actually also got a very, very good heart, which people don't always realise. They only often see the Instagram version, you know, with his eccentric sartorial choices and so on and so forth, which, by the way, I couldn't give a damn about. It's up to him what he wears. And actually, I think he looks quite cool. Not that he would care what I think. But anyway, who are any of us to criticize what he wears? Nonetheless, people do. And but I think he's a great guy with a good heart. I'm going to tell you a little anecdote. It's not a funny anecdote, but it's one of those ones that tells you a little story about a person. So my mother died 6 years ago. Died of cancer. And she was a writer. And it so happened that Lewis had spoken to her on the telephone once. And the reason he'd spoken to her on the telephone was that I was briefing him, giving him a media briefing. And then I had to go away for some reason. I said, Lewis, just wait there. I've got to go away. This is obviously when I was at McLaren. And when I went away, my phone rang and he saw Mum on my phone. So he answered it. He said, hello, you must be Matt's mum. I'm Lewis. It took her a little while to work out whether it was somebody having a joke. Anyway, she was already fighting cancer at that time, but she was completely compos mentis still, although physically debilitated. But she then realised it was him and had a very good chat. I came back. He'd already rung off, hung up, and he didn't tell me. So I carried on doing the media briefing, and I only found out from my mum. Maybe the next day when I spoke to her, I said, hi, Mum, how are you? And she said, nice of Lewis to talk to me. I thought, oh my God, she's gone doolally. What are you talking about, Mum? Anyway, she explained. Anyway, that was when we were at McLaren. And then when she died, which was just on the Thursday before the 2013 German Grand Prix. Now, by this time, of course, Lewis was driving for Mercedes-Benz. I was still at McLaren. So we weren't even in the same team anymore. So I didn't go to that race, obviously, because my mum had just died literally on the Thursday before it. So I rang my colleagues and Steve Cooper, my very close colleague at McLaren at the time, and said, mate, can you tell everybody that I'm not going to come to the race because unfortunately my mum passed away just now. He said, I'm so sorry, mate. I said, yeah, fine. Yeah. Could you just pass it on? So after a little while, I began to get the odd text message from friends, including you, dear Pinky, and other people, colleagues at McLaren, people in the media, various people, sending me the odd condolence text message. Anyway, I was then sitting that evening at 10 o'clock at night, UK time, 11 o'clock at night, German time, in my mother's house, and her body was still lying there, and aunts and uncles and cousins and neighbors and friends were all there having a drink, paying tribute. Her body was going to be taken out by the undertaker the next day. Sorry, this is a bit maudlin, but there's a reason for me telling you all this. And at 10 o'clock our time, 11 o'clock German time, my phone rang. Lewis Hamilton. So I answered, and I was very surprised. Remember, we didn't work together anymore. I said, Lewis, I'm not in Germany. He said, I know you're not in Germany, Matt. I know you're not. I've just heard this very minute that your mum passed away today. So I just want to pass on my condolences to you and to your family. And if you happen to be with any of your family as we are speaking now, please tell them all that I will remember your mother in my prayers tonight. God bless her and God bless you. Now that is seriously first-class behavior, isn't it?
That's lovely.
Seriously first-class behavior. And that is the side of Lewis that people don't always see or don't even know exists. But I like telling that story because it doesn't have pull people up short when they start telling me that he's not a good guy or he's a twat or whatever people say.
What?
He's a fantastic guy, and I have an enormous amount of time for him.
That's lovely. No, really wonderful. What about Jensen and Fernando? God, you've set the bar quite high. I'm not sure they're going to beat that one.
Well, I know Lewis better than I know either of them, actually. I worked probably more closely with Lewis than either of those. I'll actually say one a little story about Fernando, which goes back quite a time, actually, before I was at McLaren, because I joined McLaren in January 2008. And this was in the late summer of 2007. And it goes back again to Spygate. So the drivers at McLaren were Lewis Hamilton and Fernando Alonso first time round. And by that time, it was the Hungarian Grand Prix. And the whole Spygate scandal and controversy was at its absolute height. And there used to be a thing called Meet the Team, perhaps there still is, a thing called Meet the Team at McLaren, which is after qualifying on a Saturday afternoon. And sometimes, you know, a couple of dozen journalists would turn up. But this was Spygate. So there was standing room only. It was absolutely chock-a-block. Remember, I was one of the journalists. I hadn't yet joined McLaren, or I was very soon to do so. And the press conference began, and it was Ron Dennis and Norbert Haug, who was the Motorsport director of Mercedes-Benz at the time, Mercedes-Benz being the engine partner of McLaren at the time, and the two drivers, Fernando Alonso and Lewis Hamilton, except Lewis didn't turn up. Lewis had gone to the stewards instead to grass Fernando up for the mess up in qualifying, if you recall. Fernando had deliberately slowed and impeded and delayed Lewis. So anyway, it was very, and that's what all the journalists wanted to ask about. And there was a really, really tense atmosphere. Now, one of the things, if you know Ron well and you have worked with him well, is that he's very precise about everything. He admits to being OCD about cleanliness. And one of the things he absolutely loathes above almost everything else is people who eat juicy fruit without a knife and fork. So if you're eating a nectarine or a peach or a plum, Ron wants you to put it on a plate and have a sharp knife, steady it with the fork, cut it with a sharp knife, and then put small, neat pieces of the fruit into your mouth with the fork. Fernando arrived with, I think, the largest and ripest peach I have ever seen. And he just sat next to Ron like that. and letting all the juice run down into his beard and leaving the bits of fruit pulp in his beard and just letting it go down and making a slurpy noise. Not everybody present would have known quite how painful Rom would have been finding that, but believe me, Fernando did. Fernando was definitely on a number there with Rom. And
very deliberate.
Yes.
I love it.
Absolutely. But that's Fernando. Fernando is a great driver, great driver. He's also an operator.
Yeah. Poor Ron, how is he going to be coping with coronavirus?
Well, he washes quite a lot at the best of times.
I know, that's what I'm thinking. This will be freaking him out.
Well, hopefully he will be in the clear because, you know, you're supposed to wash your hands every 20 minutes.
And he does that anyway.
Service resumed for Ron.
I don't want to wash my hands of you. I want to talk to you all night. In fact, I'd quite like to open a bottle of red wine and just carry on this conversation to the small wee hours. But we have to wrap things up there. Matt, it's such a pleasure to talk to you. Can we do this regularly, please?
Absolutely. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Pinky. One of the things I say about Formula One, I mean, I have loved my time in Formula One. I love being in motorsport. The thing I miss most about Formula One is my mates, and you're certainly one of them, and I miss you very much. So,
miss you too. Good to see your face.
Thank you, Matt Bishop, for your time. Do follow him on Twitter, especially if you are a complete F1 keeno, because his knowledge is encyclopedic. And he does this lovely thing on Twitter where he says, on this day in 1972, or whatever the year, and he brings back lovely memories. He also remembers great races through the years. As I say, there is nothing this man doesn't know about Formula One, so he is a pleasure to talk to. Loads more great guests coming up and loads more chances to win those Bose noise-cancelling headphones. Make sure that you share your stories of lockdown with us. We all know it's a strange time, and so it's important for us to keep communicating, keep talking, and add the hashtag Bose if you want to be in with a chance of winning some of those headphones. For now, it's goodbye from me, but loads more great guests on the way, including Sir Jackie Stewart, David Coulthard, and for the world of rugby, Will Greenwood and Jamie Roberts, to name but a few. Until then, I'll speak to you soon. Stay home, stay safe, and stay connected.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.